I want to welcome you to St. Andrew's. Good morning. Thank you for coming. We are getting the second part of the Bible study on Esther. I was so fascinated last week. I kept thinking, I'm going to go read the rest of it. Diane said not to. So let me introduce Diane Hogel. I am so excited. Her presentation last week was great. And in February, there will be the Book of Ruth, presented by Diane. I think she's got a permanent job. Oh, thank you, Diane.
Thank you. You're the best. Thank you all for being here. I know we'll have more people wandering in. And I want to respect your time, starting on time. And then also, last week I feel bad. I forgot to open with prayer. So I would like to do that right now. If you could bow your heads. Dear Heavenly Father, thank you for this time for us to be able to read your word and learn. We are grateful for this time. We're grateful for this building, for this fellowship, for heat, for coffee, for good food. And help open our hearts and minds as we listen to your word in the Book of Esther. In the Lord's name, amen. Okay, so last week somebody described it as a cliffhanger, and I told you not to read during the week, which was correct, but you can do whatever you want. So what I have up here is a review in case any of you were not here or have forgotten about things. These are the high points of what we talked about. We don't know who wrote the Book of Esther. The indication is that it was a Jew, because the emphasis was on the Jewish festival. And then some of my footnotes from my NIV Bible said that Jewish nationalism permeates the book. That was the NIV version of that. Central purpose was to record the institution of the Festival of Purim and to keep alive the memory of the great deliverance of the Jewish people during the reign of King Xerxes. And then there's also he goes by another name, which someone struggled with last week, so I'm not even going to try. I'm just going to go with Xerxes. There's no substantial evidence that we have that there was actually a woman named Esther. I don't doubt that. They don't have the evidence. The book is considered a novella, which is a short story. And Esther was adopted by Mordecai. You remember Mordecai? There was a lot last week about Mordecai. And her parents had both died, so he became her guardian. King Xerxes was angry with his wife, Queen Vashti, because she would not come to him when he demanded her. So he decided to seek another king. I'm really glad that my husband doesn't get upset with me when he commands me and that he just picks another wife. That's a good thing. As you may remember, Esther did not reveal her nationality as a Jew to anyone because Mordecai had forbid her to. Now, you may remember that people knew he was a Jew, but he did not want her to reveal that.
Do you know what Tar is?
Haman. Haman was honored by the king. You may remember him. We use the word narcissism to describe him. And he expected people to bow down to him, but Mordecai was one of those people who refused to do that. It made Haman furious, and because he knew Mordecai was a Jew, he plotted to have the king kill all the Jews. And then couriers went out to share the edict from the king that they were to kill all the Jews. And then Haman built gallows to kill Mordecai because he assumed that the king would grant him the right to be able to do that. Okay, so today, on the back table, if you didn't see on the way in, there's a handout from last week, if you've already got it. The map that shows Susa, which is the capital where all of this took place, And then also there's, let's see, there was one, oh, there were terms back there if you wanted to follow kind of who certain people were. So that's available to you. And then let's go to chapter 6, verses 1 through 14. There's Bibles back there if you do not have your Bible with you. My beloved over here has another microphone, so when I ask people to read, he will share that with you. So we're going to read chapter 6, 1 through 14. Who might be willing to read that for me?
All right. On that night, the king could not sleep, and he gave orders to bring the book of records, the annals, and they were read to the king. It was found written how Mordecai had told about Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's eunuchs, who guarded the house threshold, and who had conspired to assassinate King Hazarus. Then the king said, "What honor or distinction has been bestowed on Mordecai for this?" The king's servants who attended him said, "Nothing has been done for him." The king said, "Who is in the court?" Now Haman had just entered the outer court of the king's palace to speak to the king about having Mordecai hanged on the gallows that he had prepared for him. So the king's servants told him, "Haman is there, standing in the court." The king said, "Let him come in." So Haman came in, and the king said to him, "What shall be done for the man whom the king wishes to honor?" Haman said to himself, "Whom would the king wish to honor more than me?" So Haman said to the king, "For the man whom the king wishes to honor, let royal robes be brought, which the king has worn, and a horse that the king has ridden with a royal crown on its head. Let the robes and the horse be handed over to one of the king's most noble officials. Let him robe the man whom the king wishes to honor, and let him conduct the man on horseback through the open square of the city, proclaiming before him, 'Thus shall it be done for the man whom the king wishes to honor.'" Then the king said to Haman, "Quickly, take the robes and the horse, as you have said, and do so to the Jew Mordecai, who sits at the king's gate. Leave out nothing that you have mentioned." So Haman took the robes and the horse and robed Mordecai and led him riding through the open square of the city, proclaiming, "Thus shall it be done for the man whom the king wishes to honor." Then Mordecai returned to the king's gate, but Haman hurried to his house, mourning and with his head covered. When Haman told his wife Zeresh and all his friends everything that had happened to him, his advisors and his wife Zeresh said to him, "If Mordecai, before whom your downfall has begun, is of the Jewish people, you will not prevail against him, but will surely fall before him."
Perfect. Thank you. So, question. Why did Haman's family think he was coming to ruin? There's no right or wrong answers, just thoughts. Okay, I'll just throw out in verse 13. His advisors and his wife Zeresh said to him, "Since Mordecai, before whom your downfall has started, is of Jewish origin, you cannot stand against him. You will surely come to ruin." So the family was able to read between the lines more than he was. And I think, and again, I use this word loosely, but with narcissism, you know, I don't think a person that has those traits sees the whole picture. They see everything through their own lens in maybe how they want to see things. And so they could foretell that something was definitely coming. Now, chapter 6, where I just read from was 13.
Got it.
Okay. What do you think the lesson learned from this chapter 6 that we just read is, if there's one?
Mm-hmm.
okay. It's not enough coffee this morning. My thought related to this was something that I had read in a commentary. And it, according to some theologians, it demonstrates that there is no force in all of creation that can stand against God's plan. God moves heaven and earth to see that sin is paid for. What are your thoughts about that statement, or was that too far-reaching for what we just read?
Repeat it again.
Okay. It demonstrates that there is no force in all of creation that can stand against God's plan. God moves heaven and earth to see that sin is paid for.
It fits.
Mm-hmm. It does. Okay. So even though there was a plan by Haman, that God's will in all of this and God's strength in all of this set down and prevented the issues that were to come later. So, yeah, I think it fits too. Okay, so now we're going to go. Do you have any questions so far? Okay. Chapter 7. Let's go to verses 1 through 19, which I know is kind of long. Would someone be willing to read that? Okay, I will read it. Let's see, chapter 7. Now, I'm reading out of the NIV Bible, which is a little bit different, for example, than what Jean was reading. Hers might have been the Revised Standard. So the king and Haman went to dine with Queen Esther. And as they were drinking wine on that second day, the king again asked, "Queen Esther, what is your petition? It will be given you. What is your request? Even up to half the kingdom, it will be granted." Then Queen Esther answered, "If I have found favor with you, O king, and if it pleases your majesty, grant me my life. This is my petition. And spare my people. This is my request. For I and my people have been sold for destruction and slaughter and annihilation. If we had merely been sold as male and female slaves, I would have kept quiet because no such distress would justify disturbing the king." King Xerxes asked Queen Esther, "Who is he? Where is the man who has dared to do such a thing?" Esther said, "The adversary and enemy is this vile Haman." Then Haman was terrified before the king and queen. The king got up in a rage, left his wine, and went out into the palace garden. But Haman, realizing that the king had already decided his fate, stayed behind to beg Queen Esther for his life. Just as the king returned from the palace gardens to the banquet hall, Haman was falling on the couch where Esther was reclining. The king exclaimed, "Will he even molest the queen while she is with me in the house?" As soon as the word left the king's mouth, they covered Haman's face. Then Harbona, one of the eunuchs attending the king, said, "A gallows 75 feet high stands by Haman's house. He had it made for Mordecai, who spoke up to help the king." The king said, "Hang him on it." So they hanged Haman on the gallows he had prepared for Mordecai. Then the king's fury subsided. So just a thought, why did the king not turn on Esther and let her be part of the edict to die along with the other Jews?
She was a court favored wife.
Yes. Oh, yes. She was the current favored wife. So the fact that she, you know, there's no indication that he knew earlier, okay, that she was Jewish. And he did. He totally favored her. So that makes perfect sense. What iconic circumstances surrounded Haman's death in verses 9 and 10, where he was hung in the gallows? What's iconic about that?
Well, the fact that he built it for someone else.
Exactly. Exactly, Shirley. That he had this big plan that he was going to hang Mordecai. And it ended up being his ending instead. So, kind of strange. So, we're going to go on to chapter 8 now. Excuse me. Chapter 8, verses 1 through 8 and verse 11. Would anybody be willing to read that?
On that day, King Ahasuerus gave Queen Esther the house of Haman, the enemy of the Jews, and Mordecai came before the king, for Esther had told what he was to her. Then the king took off his signet ring, which he had taken from Haman, and gave it to Mordecai. So Esther set Mordecai over the house of Haman. Then Esther spoke again to the king. She fell at his feet, weeping, pleading with him to avert the evil design of Haman and the Agagite and the plot that he had devised against the Jews. You may write as you please with regard to the Jews in the name of the king, and seal it with the king's ring. For an edict written in the name of the king and sealed with the king's ring cannot be revoked.
And then if you can read verse 11, please.
By these letters, the king allowed the Jews who were in every city to assemble and defend their lives, to destroy, to kill, and annihilate any armed force of any of them, with the children and women, and to plunder their goods on a single day throughout the provinces of the king Ahasuerus, on the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar. A copy of the writ was to be issued as a decree in every province and published to all peoples, and the Jews were to be ready on that day to take revenge on their enemies.
Thank you. There was great celebrating by Jews following this new edict. How do you think that all the risks that Esther took also actually points to Jesus? An open-ended question. How did what she did seem similar to what Jesus might have done, or her focus on that? I mean, not that she can focus on Jesus, but any thoughts on that? My questions are too hard this morning.
For the sake of many, one person was willing to suffer the consequences. And though the consequences didn't come, Jesus did get the consequences. And it was told, you know, by the enemies of Jesus, it was expedient. You know, when he wrote, in John, when it's written, it was expedient that one person should die in terms for the Jews. But again, there's been people who have stepped up for the sake of the many to try to influence the opposition or the situation that they've been in.
Thank you, Jean. Yes. Pastor Laura was so wonderful. She shared several books with me to help me prepare for this. And this was one of the questions that came out of one of those commentaries.
And she, according to this, according to some theologians, she risked her life so that the Jews may have life. It was only through her intercession that God's people were saved. And so Jesus does the same for us that Esther did for her people. God was willing to give up his life so that we might live. It's kind of an interesting thought, for sure. My mind certainly hadn't gone there when I first read it, but the commentaries were very interesting. So we're going to go to chapter 9 now, and I'll read these. So chapter 9, I'm going to read verses 1 through 5. On the 13th day of the 12th month, the month of Adar, the edict commanded by the king was to be carried out. On this day, the enemies of the Jews had hoped to overpower them, but now the tables were turned, and the Jews got the upper hand over those who hated them. The Jews assembled in their cities in all of the provinces of King Xerxes to attack those seeking their destruction. No one could stand against them because the people of all the other nationalities were afraid of them. And all the nobles of the provinces, the satraps, the governors, and the king's administrators helped the Jews, because fear of Mordecai had seized them. Mordecai was prominent in the palace. His reputation spread throughout the provinces, and he became more and more powerful. The Jews struck down all of their enemies with the sword, killing and destroying them, and they did what they pleased to those who hated them. Last week we talked about how, with everything going on in the Middle East, this seems like a very timely book to be reading. So reading this part, I had lots of questions. I don't know if you do or not. Why would Jews attack those who hated them when they had not first been attacked? What are your thoughts about that?
Greed.
Okay.
You know, the Six-Day War was, Israel was about to be attacked, but before they were, they attacked back. That's how it comes to the Jewish way, but that's very clever.
Preventative.
Yeah. They knew it was coming, they were ready.
Okay.
The Six-Day War in what?
67?
67, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, there's been a lot of history on the news related to those things. So yes, when you know you're hated and somebody wants to kill you, preventative. Okay, I'm going to also read in the same chapter verses 11 through 17. The number of those slain in the citadel of Susa, now this is the capital where everything has been taking place, was reported to the king the same day. The king said to Queen Esther, "The Jews have killed and destroyed 500 men and the 10 sons of Haman in the citadel of Susa. What have they done in the rest of the king's provinces? Now what is your petition? It will be given you. What is your request? It will also be granted." "If it pleases the king," Esther answered, "give the Jews in Susa permission to carry out this day's edict tomorrow also, and let Haman's 10 sons be hanged in the gallows." So the king commanded that this be done. An edict was issued in Susa, and they hanged the 10 sons of Haman. The Jews in Susa came together on the 14th day of the month of Adar, and they put to death in Susa 300 men, but they did not lay their hands on the plunder. Meanwhile, the remainder of the Jews who were in the king's provinces also assembled to protect themselves and get relief from their enemies. They killed
75,000 of them, but did not lay their hands on the plunder. This happened on the 13th day of the month of Adar, and on the 14th they rested and made it a day of feasting and joy. So, question on this section. The hanging of the sons of Haman was carried out. No Jews took plunder from those they killed. Do you have any idea why they wouldn't steal and take things from those that they knew hated them and wanted to kill them? They just killed them and left. What are your thoughts about that?
It really makes no sense.
It makes no sense?
Yeah. Because that's not the way it's typically done.
Exactly. So Jay was saying it's not typically the way that it's done. So, you know, they usually would go in and kill and take things, and they didn't. So not really a reason why, unless maybe they were focused more on just killing their enemy. And, I mean, this is just a thought off my head. I don't have any basis for this. Killing their enemy, but putting a focus on that and not the theft. Yes, Nikki?
Got a little explanation in my book.
Oh, I like that. Please.
It says, the Jews defeated their enemies. This incident is the antithesis of Saul's disobedience to God. Saul failed to kill the Amalekites and took forbidden plunder. He consequently lost the throne. The Jews took no plunder after this incident. Mordecai ascended to a position of leadership second only to the king himself. So the other people took stuff and lost the throne, but the Jews did the opposite.
Oh, interesting. I did not see that in my Bible. Thank you for sharing that. That's helpful. Very helpful. We're going to read verses 18 through 26a. Would anybody be willing to read that? And if you mispronounce it, nobody will care or know.
Skip over it. So if you hear a skip. But the Jews who were in the Susa gathered on the 13th day and on the 14th and rested on the 15th day, making that a day of feasting and gladness. Therefore the Jews of the village who lived in the open towns hold the 14th day of the month of Adar as a day of gladness and feasting, a holiday on which they send gifts of food to one another. Molochai recorded these things and sent letters to all the Jews who were in all the provinces of the king, both near and far, enjoining them that they should keep the 14th day of the month Adar and the 15th day of the same month year by year, as the days on which the Jews gained relief from their enemies, and as the month that had been turned from them from sorrow into gladness and from mourning into holiday, that they should make these days of feasting and gladness, days of sending gifts of food to one another and presents to the poor. So the Jews adopted a custom, which they had begun to do as Mordecai had written to them. How much further?
26a.
Haman, son of the Agagite, the enemy of all the Jews, had plotted against the Jews to destroy them and had cast Pur, that is, the lot, to crush and destroy them. But when Esther came before the king, he gave orders in writing that the wicked plot that he had devised against the Jews should come upon his own head, and that he and his son should be hanged on the gallows. Therefore, these days are called Purim, from the word pure. Thus, because of all that was written in this letter, and of what they had faced in this matter, and of what had happened to them. I didn't see an A.
That's okay. That was my interpretation. So that's totally great. Thank you, Jay. I appreciate that. So, do you know anyone who celebrates Purim?
Don't the Jewish celebrate?
Pardon me?
Don't the Jewish celebrate?
They do. The Jewish. So I didn't know if anybody had friends who are Jewish that you might be aware of. I have a friend who is very devoutly Jewish, and I've never heard her mention it. She talks about Yom Kippur and other kinds of things. But in Israel, this is very interesting, I thought. In Israel, this is one of the most popular festivals. So as far as the United States, I don't know, but definitely in Israel. And typical gifts, and they talked about this a little bit in the chapter, typical gifts include wine, candy, and baked goods. This is considered a Purim basket. So in John 5, the Lord Jesus is up in Israel for an unnamed feast. Scholars have debated whether the feast was Passover, Purim, Sukkoth, which is occurs after the High Holy Days, or maybe even Pentecost. So that was an interesting piece, is that maybe Jesus had celebrated Purim. So kind of interesting. So we're into chapter 10, which is the last chapter. And would anyone like to read just verses 1 through 3?
A tribute on land and on the islands of the sea, all the acts of his power and might, and the full account of the high honor of Mordecai, to which the king advanced him, are they not written in the annals of the kings of Medina and Persia? For Mordecai the Jew was next to rank in King Ahasuerus, and he was powerful among the Jews and popular with the many kindred. For he sought the good in his people and interceded for the welfare of all his descendants.
Thank you, Shirley. So commentary on this particular chapter stated, God's hand in history never rules out our actions. The actions of Esther and Mordecai were critical to the preservation of the people of God. So another question, as we look back over the whole book of Esther, do you note any references, specific references to God in the book? Just remembering, were there prayers or petitions or things of that nature? The reason I ask is that the only one that I was able to find was fasting, and fasting may not have been religious. It may have been more of a secular kind of thing. But the did Esther pray for guidance from God? No, there's no indication of this. And so some of the theologians have looked at this book like, why is there not more involvement in here or references to God? And I think that may be why they refer to it as a novella. And then if there's not a lot of reference in there, how did this book end up in the Old Testament? If it's not really focuses on God. And, you know, I kept expecting Esther to get down on her knees and pray to the Lord for help. That did not happen. She put her worth in place with the king. How do you think this ended up in the Old Testament? Any thoughts on that? No right or wrong answer. Okay. We don't really know. I'm giving you a lot of we don't really know today. And I think there are people who very firmly believe that Esther was
an actual person and that these things actually took place, and then it just made sense that it would be part of the Old Testament. But we don't really know. So those are the main pieces that I was going to cover in the book of Esther these 2 days. Do you have any questions about anything that we've covered or any thoughts? Yes?
I have a Could you reread the verse about what they did during the Purim?
Yes. Let's see. The Jews in Susa, however, had assembled on the 13th and 14th, and then on the 15th day they rested and made it a day of feasting and joy. That is why rural Jews, those living in villages, observe the 14th of the month of Adar as a day of joy and feasting, a day for giving presents to each other. Is that what you were looking for?
That's exactly what I was looking for.
Good.
I was struck by, we celebrate Christmas by gathering, feasting, giving one another presents, and loving one another. And I was going, I was just struck by the similarity. And that's a proper way.
Yes.
Celebrate.
Yes.
Thank you.
And like I said, in Israel, we know it's a huge festival every year. Other questions? Jay?
I was just reading from my Lutheran study Bible right at the front. It makes a comment about Martin Luther. And it says, Martin Luther once said he wished the Book of Esther did not exist at all. Yet the assurance of deliverance and bold service to the neighbor are Lutheran themes. Like Mordecai, we can be confident that God is our deliverer. Like Esther, we can choose to seek deliverance for others.
Oh, I like that. Wow. I need a Lutheran study Bible. That's really helpful. Very helpful. And interesting to get his thoughts on whether Esther should have been included or not. That's very interesting. Other questions or thoughts about Esther? Well, I greatly appreciate you participating in this. Thank you so much for coming. I hope that you will consider in February coming for Ruth, which will be a 2-week series as well. And thank you for your time, and happy Reformation Sunday.
Thank you, Diane.